This is Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show, with new episodes every week on how to live well. Shine On is heard all over the world as a podcast, but it's heard first on the radio in New York's Hudson Valley. Hi, it's Casey, and I am so grateful you tuned in to Shine On, inspired by the absurdity of a recent Reddit post. Matt, a young man from my hometown of Verplank, New York, was moved to finally share his story about giving God a back door and receiving a handful of grace while traveling on a divine adventure a year ago. That story is coming up. We're brought to you today by Nissan of Yorktown Heights. Visit nissanofyorktownheights.com.
This month, visit Nissan of Yorktown Heights. 0% APR available on select new Nissans. This month only, 500 vehicles to choose from. Find them online at nissanofyorktownheights.com. 0% APR available on select new Nissans this month only. 500 vehicles to choose from at Nissan of Yorktown Heights. Find them online at nissanofyorktownheights.com. Nissan of Yorktown Heights. You'll love this place.
Hi, it's Casey, and you're listening to Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show. Matt is here to share his story filled with grace, and you'll have a chance to reach out to him and get your copy of this story because it's meant to be told to fill the world with hope.
In June 2021, I began feeling crazy pressure in my heart. I didn't know what it was attributed to. I thought it might have been some kind of severe acid reflux, so I took Tums. I eventually was looking at my Apple Watch. I had a lot of stress at work. I thought maybe this is just stress or anxiety. All day my Apple Watch was like AFib heartbeat, high heart rate detected, like sending me all kinds of emergency warnings. And I was like, probably just stress. I went to work. I came home. I still wasn't feeling right. And I kept getting the messages. So I said, you know what? I think I better get this checked out. So I went to an urgent care. They took one look at me and they called 911 and rushed me to, I was in Florida at the time, it was the Palm Beach Gardens Hospital. When I was there, they gave me medicine to alleviate the pain, so I felt good at the time, and they did all the medical imaging. And the doctor came back and he, like, I could tell from the demeanor something was not good before he even opened his mouth. And he said, you have large tumors in your mediastinum, like the cavity where your heart and chest is. And we don't know what they are. We need to biopsy them. And I'm like hearing these words and I'm like, wait, what? Cancer? And I'm like, I don't smoke. I was convinced at the time they had the charts mixed up. I'm like, I don't smoke. I don't even smoke pot. I don't know. You got the wrong charts. And he's like, no, they're yours. So that I was in the hospital for the week while they stabilized because my heart kept, there was a pericardial infusion and there was a lot of fluid and they did a biopsy and the doctors there, the oncology team there said, we don't know what this is. You need to go somewhere more specialized. And my mom and dad are amazing. The second I got in the hospital, they were on a flight down to Florida. They were in the room with me the next morning. And my mom's a nurse practitioner who's like each doctor knows exactly what she's the best patient advocate anyone could ask for. She said, just stabilize him, get him on a plane. We're going to go to Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York City. They did that. I went to Sloan Kettering. I had one consultation, and right from there, they admitted me to the hospital, and I began treatment. Also, the comforting thing is, while Florida didn't know what this was, MSK said, oh, yeah, we see like four or five of these a month. We know how to treat this. This is going to be great.
MSK said, we see four or five of these a month?
Yes. And men my age, it's a rare form of testicular cancer that is congenital. It's there since birth, and at age 30, it starts rapidly growing. I was 33 years old. Cancer was not even on the rate. Like, there was not on my bingo card. I like to eat, don't get me wrong, but I was lifting weights. I did CrossFit. The day before all this happened, I went to CrossFit, and it was really hard for me to believe.
What kind of stressful job were you in that when your Apple Watch is sending you signals, you're like, oh, it's just work?
Well, for the past 10 years, I've been working in government contracting and intelligence, counterterrorism, and national security work. There was nothing going on in June 2021 to alarm a general public or anything like that. But I did just attribute this to excessive stress. And I think I had a project ongoing at the time or something, but yeah, it was just, yeah, wild.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So MSK says, yeah, we've seen this before. In fact, we see it with regularity. What was the reaction from your family? I just can't imagine how this, what this did to your family.
I mean, what it did to my family is unspeakable. And that was the hardest part for me. Just the stress. I had nothing but support from my entire family, my mom, my dad, my brother. They all drove into the city every day to make sure I wasn't in the hospital alone. The parking fees with that alone, like all of these things. I know my mom kept a brave face because she was hearing things an untrained medical ear didn't. I can't imagine how she held it together and still does. She's my hero. So I think when they heard that they had identified it, they had seen other people like it, there was a relief. At that time, they were optimistic there could be a full cure. So MSK was wonderful. Everyone there is amazing. The food is also amazing. but I had 20 rounds of chemo. I had radiation and go through all of the treatment and the surgery. I had an open heart surgery, which I was a little naive. I thought, oh, I'm going to go to bed and wake up and they'll give me medicine and I'll be fine. I didn't realize the amount of recovery, years of recovery for a surgery like this. But when I finished that, I tried to just get right back to work. A month after the surgery, I went back to work. I tried to just put, I didn't handle it well. I tried to put it behind me, pretend like it didn't happen, and just try to get back to normal. And a month later, after I went back to work during a routine scan, they found a sarcoma recurrence in the exact same spot. So I had to have an immediate surgery, emergency surgery to remove that. Although this was in the same cavity, they could no longer do the open heart surgery through the front like they did the last time. So they had to go in through the back and through the ribs. I needed more radiation. A month after the radiation, 3 months after the second surgery, I was kind of done with treatment, but, you know, still just sitting in this place, didn't know what to do. So the doctor said, well, all you can do right now is walk. And I said, okay, well, I've always wanted to do the Camino Santiago or the Way of St. James. It's a Catholic pilgrimage from France to Santiago, Spain. It's this ancient pilgrimage, and you get a passport, and you stop at all of these pilgrim resting spots, and you stamp your passport, and at the end, you're given a certificate for completing the pilgrimage when you arrive at the cathedral in Santiago. I thought the entire thing sounded like such an adventure. It also, you stay in these hostel-style accommodations with pilgrim dinner. So it also was a lot of walking and hiking, but not camping. I could sleep in a bed every night.
Great.
That was ideal. And so I did that and made incredible friends. It was an amazing experience. It took 35 days for the whole about 500-mile trail. And then I came back, and the entire time I was on the trail, I had this pain in my hip. But I thought it was because I was the most out of shape I've ever been in my life, and now I'm walking sometimes 20 miles a day. But when I came back and we did a routine PET scan, the doctor said that I had the sarcoma had traveled through the blood and was now in my right iliac hip bone. That's when also MSK, the whole tone changed. They stopped saying things like full cure, and they start saying things like quality of life. Because I was in pain, they had me meet with the palliative care team. We just talked about how to make myself comfortable through the rest of treatment. That was incredibly hard to hear. Everything they were doing now was adding on to the chemo I had gotten just a year before. I was just getting extremely sick. I had every symptom, and it was just getting worse. My hip was in excruciating pain. I had to start walking with a cane. It was very horrible. It was horrible for me, but mostly for my family and my friends. So I was in Mass at Sacred Heart in Monroe Woodbury. I go there sometimes because there's a wonderful priest, Father David Ryder, up there. I just really like his sermons. He had mentioned that they were going on a pilgrimage to Medjugorje. And he was like, I really want you to go. He felt really strongly. I said, I don't know if I can do international travel with my hip. 2 days of flying. I don't want to be the one that holds up everyone else on this group and ruins it for them. Like, I had a lot of reasons in my head. And I think, you know, they're probably defense mechanisms or whatever. The entire time I was kind of afraid. And I know it sounds crazy, but even in my prayers, I was afraid of being let down. I didn't want God to let me down. So, even, this sounds crazy. In the entire time, I don't think I ever prayed for a cure. I was giving God a back door. I was like, please let me have the grace and strength to handle this, to be strong around my family and friends. But I never asked for a cure, which sounds so crazy to me now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I was giving God a back door in my prayers. Like, either I believed he couldn't do it or wouldn't do it, or this is how I feel like I should pray type of thing.
Right.
It's wild to think about it now. But the thing that I inherited from my family, my Nana, grandmother, who I was very close with, she was a devout Irish Catholic, and that definitely took a hold on me. And then I went to the Citadel, a military school in South Carolina. As part of their program, you're mandated to attend a service. It's like a part of the spiritual development. They don't force you to a service, but it's got to be one. So I would attend Catholic Mass all 4 years through college. And even when I was traveling internationally for work, I just like always would go to Mass, because even then I thought it was cool to see all the different mosaics and the art and although the buildings and people look different, everything else was exactly the same. And I thought that was pretty cool.
We share this because we grew up in the same small town and went to the same small church, I think. And
And I took CCD where you went to school.
Yeah. And I feel like that's the greatest gift my family gave me, you know, was
me too.
Their faith. This is fascinating that you never prayed for a cure. You walked Camino de Santiago, and then you come back from that and you find that it's moved to your hip. You never said, hey, God, I just walked Camino Santiago.
Yeah,
what the heck's going on?
Mean, yeah, the Bible tells us God is all things. And I could not bring myself to view him as cruel. So it was even reflected in my prayers that I just, all right, if this is the way and I'm going to have an early death, then please just give me the strength to do it, give my parents and family the strength. But please, like, I don't know. I figured everything happens according to the plan. So if the plan was for me to, I mean, what a horrible plan, but the plan to keep getting metastasis and 3 years of chronic illness, I mean, I guess that's the plan. Who am I to question it?
Did that sentiment change? Did you ever say, God, I'm ready for a cure?
I don't know if it ever did. That's the craziest part. I mean, my faith never wavered. I know I've discussed this with Father David, and because he was like, well, have you ever actually prayed for a cure? And I was like, whoa, I don't know. After he started talking to me about going to Medjugorje and I started thinking about it, I thought, all right, yeah, I must have happened about that time, because I definitely remember the discussion with Father David about praying for a cure. So he was adamant that I go. He also gave me a book. Long story short is the Virgin Mary in the early 80s appeared to six teenagers in a small village in now Bosnia Herzegovina. She has been making visitations ever since to these teenagers, and she's given them Fatima-esque promises and prophecies and continues to do it. It's still going on to this day. So the church can't officially declare it a miracle or investigate it because it's still ongoing. I just read the story and interviewed with the children that he gave me. And I've got to tell you, I am telling you this right up front, I was wrong. But the skeptic and intelligence analyst in me, the woman where we would be staying, she got married, she had kids, and she opened a hotel in this town where the visitation happened. And I was really skeptical. I was like, I don't know. Sister Lucia, after Fatima, she became a nun.
Right. Here she didn't like, open a bed and breakfast.
Yes, exactly. But I was so wrong. It's not a hotel. It's a pilgrim accommodation for lower or no cost pilgrims to share in the experience. And it was amazing. So we stayed there. It's her house. She provides two meals a day. And so we went around the village to the different church in the town square, the different stations of the cross. I mean, there's a statue of the rising Jesus, the art, the village, the people. It's all incredible.
How were you feeling at this point?
I was in so much pain. I had the cane, and a lot of this was walking around, and it's totally flat. But it was still very taxing. But overall, I was kind of just thrilled to be there. So the excitement was kind of overtaking the pain. But then one of the day's trips was to climb Apparition Hill. And this is the exact spot, this place on a hill where the Virgin Mary appeared to teenagers. I told Father David, I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. I have a hip. I don't want to hold anyone back. He's like, you can do it. You can do it. So I was like, all right. So we began climbing, and the way the hill is structured, it's not a long climb at all, but it is interesting because it's craggy limestone worn smooth by the steps of so many other pilgrims before. And so there are jagged parts, there's slippery parts. I mean, it's not a long climb, but it is by no means easy or unchallenging. But the way it's structured is every 100 feet, there's a different bas-relief or mural depicting one of the mysteries of the rosary. So you say the rosary as you climb, you reflect on the mystery, take a breathing break for me, and continue climbing. So we got through 4 decades. We're almost at the top, 100 feet from the top, and the weather turns insane. It is like crazy rain, hail the size of golf balls, like pelting people on the head and bouncing off the limestone. Like the limestone's so smooth and water is just pooling, and like there's like flash flooding. It's getting crazy. There's thunder and lightning and wind, and the whole sky is now like pitch black, like it's night. So Father David said, if you're feeling uncomfortable, you should turn back now. It's only going to get worse, but we are close to the top. And he came up specifically to me, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm like this close to the top, you know, let's just go. And that's not me being stoic or brave, but I'm just like, I came this close, I'm going to do it. So I got there, and at the exact location, South Korea gifted the village a statue of the Blessed Virgin Mother. And so I went there and I prayed. And I'm sure at this point I prayed for a cure, prayed for strength for my family, prayed for everything, prayed for people I promised I would pray for there. And then I kind of was like, I've always had this lingering feeling about prayer. I'm like, am I doing it right? I don't know. So after I was finished, I was still just up there, and I had rosary beads, and I was like trying to swing them and touch the statue, because there's a little gate around the statue. They don't want people climbing it, obviously. They want to keep it venerated. So I was like trying to swing across the grate, and I was like, that seems like a good thing to do, touch the rosary to the statue. So at this point, Father David walks over, and he says, can I pray over you? And I'm like, the answer to that is always yes. Mm-hmm. So he puts his hands on my head. My mom put her hand on my shoulder, and my Aunt Sue put her hand on my forearm, and he prayed. And I was kind of expecting like a rhyming traditional Catholic prayer, like something to St. Peregrine, the patron saint of cancer, or some kind of pre-written prayer. But this clearly came from his heart. I don't even remember it, and I would have loved, I'm a writer, I would have loved to have written it down, noted it somewhere, but I think it came from his heart. I'm not even sure he could remember it. I just remember it feeling like a very, very powerful prayer. It was punctuated with like thunder and lightning, crazy weather. I mean, it was wild. And so we began getting back down the mountain very slowly. My Aunt Sue's deadly afraid of storms, so I was just so appreciative that she would put her fears aside and stay up there and pray for me. And my mom, like, I was afraid she was going to slip and fall. So when everyone made it down the mountain, I was just so thankful that there was no medical emergencies, because I just thought this could have gone so bad, and I would just not, as bad as I felt, I would feel worse if somebody got hurt or died praying for me, you know?
Right.
So we went back to the pilgrim hall, and we kind of warmed up and had tea, and we were just like, wow, the weather was crazy, kind of like talking like that, telling stories. And I just thanked my mom and Aunt Sue for staying up there and praying with me. And I said, and I got to thank Father David too. I mean, just that was awesome. And I said, who was the fourth pilgrim there that put their hand on my back? And my mom and my Aunt Sue looked at each other, and there's like, they were like, there's nobody. We were facing you. There was no one there. And I was like, without a doubt, I felt a warm hand on my back during the storm, with pressure, with warmth. Like, you can convince me otherwise. Like, you can't. I felt this so intensely that it was not wind or sun. Like, it was a hand on my back. So I went and told Father David, I said, who I wanted to thank you. And I was like, and was there anyone kind of standing behind me or adjacent that would be able to put their hand on my back? Because I felt the hand. He said, no, I was looking right at you the entire time. No one was standing behind you. And oddly enough, somebody who just kind of didn't know the story, but liked the moment of people standing in prayer in a storm in front of the statue, took a picture, and there's nobody standing behind me, but I know without a doubt that there was a hand on my back. So that's when I started to realize, like, something kind of amazing might have happened there. And since then, I came back, and I've had five scans now since then, and they've all come back, no evidence of disease present. And I remember the first scan after Medjugorje, I was praying that it just didn't spread. I was like, it'll be a win if this doesn't spread. And when it came back, no evidence of disease present, I'm like, I was floored. I really was speechless. I had a really cool nurse, so I was like, I read the report myself in the mobile app portal, and I don't really speak, but I've read enough of these to know. And I'm like, wait a minute. So I called the nurse, and I'm like, can you read the report and maybe just tell me if it's okay to, like, maybe start getting excited? And I could see her reading and smiling. And she's like, okay, I'm not a doctor, but maybe you can start getting excited, but you really need to talk to a doctor.
Oh, wow.
So they brought the doctor in immediately, and she was like, yeah, you can be excited. And I was just like, wow, I can't believe that. Like, I still can't. And then I go back to how I thought about the visionaries and how I think someone should act after a miracle. And now I just painted myself into a real corner, because here I am experiencing a miracle. I'm still a sinner. I am still unworthy of everything. And here I am. I mean, God intervened directly so I may enjoy the rest of this life. And then his son gave his life so I can enjoy the next. So the least I can do is tell people about it, you know?
Yeah, so now you really understand about that lady opening up the B&B, right?
Yeah.
You get that now. Matt, who had their hand on your back?
So I think, I don't know. Because now I'm a chronic overthinker. I'm like, was it a small hand? Was it Mary? Was it an angel? It was the hand of God through however he worked, or his messengers, or him directly. But it was a hand. It was warm. It was in the middle of a freezing cold storm when I was immunocompromised and constantly shivering. So I know what I felt.
What do you most want people to know about this journey?
That it happened. I really want the impact of positivity and the power of prayer. I went on this pilgrimage in April 2023, so it's been about a year. The power of prayer is the key takeaway, I guess. I started writing this story down 100 different ways, and I really couldn't get the wording right. I didn't feel like I was doing the story justice. Sometimes it would turn out looking like one of my intelligence report, like a forensic account of it that totally lacked, like, the emotion that I felt. I really struggled with how to frame it. And maybe 2 weeks ago, just before my scans were coming up, I was on Reddit, and I was reading this post. It was a post about a man who was an accountant, and he said he had a client come in just before the tax filing deadline, and he's usually very early. And he said, why are you late? And he said, well, my wife's been battling cancer, and she passed away, and I myself am battling cancer, and I just want to be with her. I've given up treatment. It's too much. I can't take it, and I just want to get my estate in order so my kids aren't burdened with taxes after I die. And I read that, and I had to take a second because it was just too much. And then I continued to read the post, and I guess the man who was leaving made a political remark about his taxes, and the original poster came online to say, I went from having all of the empathy in the world to none at all because he voted differently. And I just thought, well, if your empathy is contingent on how someone votes, then your empathy is not worth much at all. At that moment, I decided to try to just counteract it with positivity. That post really sat with me for a while, longer than it should. So I just started writing again, and I don't think it'll ever be perfect, but I just wanted to have something positive to send out. I mean, in my dream world, I would love to make a modern Canterbury Tales of all the stories of the pilgrims on the Camino and in Medjugorje, because at the end of the day, I think everyone's looking for a miracle. Everyone got a story to tell.
That is Matt Naminsky, who invites you to reach out and help him share his story. Send him a message on Instagram, and he'll send you a booklet that he's created, complete with pictures and diary entries of his healing journey. Find him at Naminsky M. 1-N-I-E-M-I-N-S-K-I-M-1. Help Matt share this story. NIEMINSKIM1 on Instagram. Our thought for the day is from Mary of Medjugorje, who said, "If you knew how much I love you, you'd cry of joy." Shine on. You've been listening to Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show, with new episodes every week. It's your time to shine on.